Mishnas Marina, Rav Shlita. I would like to say this shir le'iloi nishmas, our dear friend Michael Kramer, Zichrono Livracha, Michael David ben Aaron Alevi, who sadly left us this week. He was a frequent attendant at our shir, and we say this shir le'iloi nishmaso. Machlokes. Well, Jews love to argue. Wherever you go, of all the peoples in the world, the best people for arguing are the Jewish people. A new rabbi once came to a shul, and it was in Eastern Europe, and he came to a point in Leining where some people were standing, some people were sitting, and they were yelling at each other. The people who were standing were yelling at the people who were sitting that they should stand up, and the people who were sitting. So the rabbi went with two representatives. He said, let's go to, I found a member of the shul, a 98-year-old man, let's visit him and find out what is the custom of our shul. Is it the tradition to sit, or is it the tradition to stand? So the representative who wanted everyone to stand asked him, is it the tradition to stand? And the old man said, no, it isn't. So the other rep said, isn't it the tradition to sit? And he said, no, it isn't. And then the rabbi said, yeah, but they're fighting the whole time, yelling at each other, whether they should sit or stand. Said the old man, yes, that is the tradition. It's in our DNA. We love arguing. And most of the time we're spending when we're learning Gemara and Shas and Poskim is about arguments. And that really livens things up and makes it exciting and makes it interesting. But the question which we're really looking at today is why? Why do we have to argue so much? Surely if HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah to Moshe at Sinai, Moshe Rabbeinu did not stand at Sinai and said, this is one opinion and that's another opinion. He told us what the mitzvahs are. And that went through the generations, Masol HaShul, Lashul Zakenim, Zakenim and Nevi'im, Anshei Knesset HaGdola, all the way through. We have a Masorah. Okay, we got the written Torah, which is clear cut in many ways, but even that speaks in riddles. The riddles, it talks about Ayin Tachas Ayin, an eye for an eye. And then we've got the oral law, the Torah Sheval Peh, but we've got Machlokes in so many different facets that why is it that we've come to that stage just to try and understand the historical context as well as the Hashkofa context and so on? Why is it that we've got all these arguments going on? Now, this topic was in fact suggested to me to talk about by Gershon Heppner. Thank you, Gershon. But he spoke to me about, let's talk about Abai and Rava, Hillel and Shammai. And I said to Gershon, yeah, that's all very well, but what about the broader context of why there is Machlokas? So that's why we have a bit of a series. Today we will look at the broad context as to what is Machlokas and why do we have it, given that we should have handed down to us such a good Masorah. And then in subsequent shiurim we can discuss Abai, Rava, Hillel and Shammai and so on. So that is the question. We look at the very first Mishnah of Shas, which is the beginning of Barachas, and we've already got an argument. Meimosa Karen Shema Ba'arabis about reading the Shema in the evening. So Rabbi Eliezer says, up to the Ashmara Karishona, which is the first watch, namely the third of the night. And the Chachomim say, no, Ad Chatzos, to the middle of the night. So you can ask, well, what did Moshe Rabbeinu say? We know, handed down to us, the B'shoch B'chol V'kumecho. In the evening you say Shema, and in the morning you say Shema. But was this sort of detail given or not? That we have a machlokas. Is it that Moshe Rabbeinu simply left it to Chazal to determine? Or was it something that people had forgotten about? That is really the question. So, the first thing to know is that when we look at the disputes, they are never about major topics. Says the Sefer Kuzri Sheni, every single machlokas which has ever taken place has been on minor issues, minor details, and not major details. For example, the Torah says, Utakatem, you blow on Rosh Hashanah. It doesn't say what you blow, but we all know that it's a shofar. The Torah says that on Sukkot, you take a pre-Eitz Hodor, a beautiful fruit. We all know that it's Esrog. Nobody argues that it's Esrog, but it doesn't say that in the Torah at all. Only in the Mishnah, where it talks about Esrog, it talks it as a given. It just says, it talks about an Esrog, but it doesn't suggest one reason why we have an Esrog. That's the accepted fact. And everybody agrees that you may not eat the chazir. You can't eat pork. There's no argument about that. And when you think about many other mitzvahs, there's no argument. The main issues of tzitzis, of tefillin, of mezuzah, of shatnas, makeh, karbonos, bikurim, chalon, nida, pesach, all these are handed down to us, but it's the minute details you'll find the arguments, not about anything major. So that leads us to the question of how do we get to that? Now, if we look at the background, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says in Daf Pei Ches, Omud Beis, Omar Rabbi Yosef Mitchila, Lohu Marbin Machlokas Bisrael. There was never really such a thing as Machlokas amongst the Jews. Ah, did not things get forgotten? He says, Elo Beisin Shel Shimon Ve'echod Yoshin Kol Belischa Chagosis. In the Beis HaMikdosh, the Beis in HaGodosut. But are you suggesting that things have never got forgotten? Do we not remember the story about when Moshe Rabbeinu died? When Moshe Rabbeinu died, 300 halachas were forgotten. And the people were crying. And there was a crisis going on. What are we going to do about these 300 halachas? And that was already at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, when he had just died. Let alone the subsequent generations in the future, the Beis HaMikdosh and so on, which was much, much later. So what happened then? In fact, when the people were crying, Kalev stood up and he said to everybody, whoever can work out what these 300 halachas were will merit my daughter in marriage. Well, that was certainly an incentive. And Asniel ben Kenas, he sat down and worked out from the Shloshes Rei Midas, from the 13 principles of deriving things, which we talk about every morning, Amar Rabbi Shmuel, B'Shloshes Rei Midos, Atoh Nidroshes, Kal V'Chomeg, Zera Shova, and so on. So from those principles, Asniel worked out what those 300 halachas were. You can ask the question. We can ask the question, why is it that Yeshua did not simply say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, look, could you remind us, please, what those halachas were? HaKadosh Baruch Hu remained silent. Why? Torah Tzivalonu Moshe. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told the Torah to Moshe and he would not talk to anybody else about halachas. The Al-Sheikh HaKadosh says that this is an allusion to Christianity. Because anybody who would come along in the future and say, God appeared to me and said to me, it's all changed now. Nobody can say that. Why? Because after Moshe Rabbeinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu remained silent. As far as halachas were concerned, that was it. Once HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe what the halachas are, he left it up to the Sanhedrin, Beis Din, Anshei Knesset HaGdola, and so on, to determine what the halachas are. Al pi harov, acharei rabban mahatos, you go according to the majority. So that's what happened, and the Rambam brings this down in Hilchos Mamrim, Perek Aleph. There, he says, based in HaGadol Shel Yerushalayim, Hein Ikar Torah Shebal Peh. So the main Torah Shebal Peh was really coming from the base Din HaGadol. Hein Amudei HaRoh. They decided everything. So, on that's what it said, Api HaTorah She Yerucho. That is a mitzvah saseh. So, in there in Halacha Dalad, Kishoya based in HaGadol Kaim Lo Hayso Machlokas Bisrael. As long as the based in HaGadol were functioning, there was no Machlokas at all. Elokoldin Shinolad Bo Sofik. Wherever people had a Sofik, a doubt, or a question, what would they do? They would go to their local based in their town, and ask, and if they knew, they told him, and if not, then they passed the question on to the higher based in, which was in Yerushalayim. They had the Beis Din of 23 on the outskirts of the Harabais. So they had the Harabais, in Yodu they said, and they answered, if not, then they went to the Beis Din of 23, Shalpi Azara. And then if they passed it on, it went to the Beis Din HaGadol, the Lischas HaGozis. So, if they knew the answer straight away, they said, if they didn't, they debated it. And if they debated it, Some said one way or some said the other way, and they had a vote, or PROV. You go according to the majority, which is what the Torah prescribes. And there was a pesach. There was never any argument. Mr. Botel, based in HaGodol, says the Rambam, however, when the based in HaGodol disintegrated, Rov Somach Lokas be Yisrael. Then argument started. Zeva Tame, the Nosen Tam Ledvorov. One view was, whatever you ask about is Tomei, and he gave a good reason. V'zeh Matai v'nos in Tan Ladorov, and the one who was Matai gave a reason for his reason. V'zeh Osa v'zeh Muta. So that is the way the Rambam explains how Machlokas came about. That there was no Machlokas whenever we had the Beis Din HaGadol. But once they stopped, what was it that caused them to stop? We do know that even just before the Chorban, 40 years before they stopped, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai in his dispute with the Romans said, at least let me carry on in Yavne. And the Beis Din HaKadosh went to Yavne. And the Gemara Rosh Hashanah lists 10 different places that they moved to. Yavne, there was ended up in Tveria. But there was this transition. And what was going on in Klal Yisrael at that time that there was such a problem? But we'll look at the historical aspect later. Let's carry on a bit more in the Gemara. Because the Gemara there in Peiches, Omud Beis in Sanhedrin, says, Misharabu Talmidei Shammai VeHillel, but when the pupils of Shammai and Hillel came about, Shelo Shomshu Kol Tzorchon is a very important phrase. Literally, they did not make use of what was needed. Shimush. They did not sit sufficiently with their rebbes to hear what they had to say. Rabu machlokas b'Yisrael, and then opinions started differing. V'nasis Torah k'shtei Toros. It was as if there were two Toros, chas v'shalom. You've only got one Torah. But because one view was saying things one way, and another view was saying things another way, both sides were giving justifications and reasons for what they were saying. But the way of the Gemara is speaking is that there was a diminution of standard, that something went down in Yeridas Hadoros, and therefore maybe it means certain things got forgotten, because they came out of the Shia saying, well, he said this principle and therefore this, no, he said this principle and therefore that, and therefore there was a lack of shimush, and that's what resulted in Machlokas be Yisrael. And we're talking now, of course, about Machlokas l'shem Shemayim. We're not talking about a quarrel, chas v'shalom. We know from Perkei Avos in Perek Hey, Mishnah Yuzayin, Machlokas shi l'shem Shemayim, so for Liskayin. If there is an argument both sides of the coin, it nevertheless, it's Liskayin. It is valid and regarded as something important, but she'ein l'shem Shemayim, namely, Korach v'chol adoso, if it's an argument, then that does not last. And the Baal Shinur explains that what is a machlokas l'shem Shemayim? When we're seeking the truth. But when you look at the machlokas of Korach v'chol adoso, that was not seeking the truth. That was a machlokas to seek power, to seek honor. That is not a proper machlokas l'shem Shemayim. So we got so many different opinions. In my own household, my wife believes that we should have stayed in Europe, and I believe we should leave Europe. So is that machlokas l'shem Shemayim? Well, probably not. But in Israel nowadays, we talk about the different number of political parties. In actual fact, there are about 9 million different political parties. Everybody's got an opinion. But what we have in difference to that is in the Torah, in the Gemara, it's talking about machlokas of a different sort. It's a machlokas which is following the path which is set to us by Moshe Rabbeinu and Acharei Rabban Mahatos. You go according to the majority view, but you have different opinions. And as soon as the Beis Din HaGadol disintegrated, that is when machlokas came about. Shelo Shomshu Kol Tzorchon. And so the Rambam writes this, he brings it down from the Gemara Mishabitel Beis Din HaGadol, Rav Sol Machlokas B'Yisrael, as we said earlier. So what actually happened? The Rambam does say that all the 613 mitzvahs were given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. If that is the case, why should there be Machlokas? I mean, was he given all the minute details? Was he told about the height of the sukkah? Was he talk about the number of walls of a sukkah? But we do find that later on the principles were with the Shlosh Esrei Midrash determined. So the Do we say that the principles were given at Har Sinai and that the Shlosh Esrei Midrash left it open for later interpretation? So there's a bit of a difference between the Rambam and the Ramban on this. The Rambam, Machlokas. So the Rambam is of the view that everything was told to Moshe Rabbeinu. But the Ramban says, no, not every small detail was told to Moshe Rabbeinu, because he was told what the mitzvahs are, and he was told that wherever interpretation is needed, you got the 13 principles, the Shlosh Esrei Midos. You get on with it, you do the homework. Which is how Asniel ben Kanas worked it out. He used the Shlosh Esrei Midos. So the Ramban is saying, we didn't really forget anything. We did not forget anything that was handed down to us, because we were told to use the Shlosh Esrei Midos. So with those 30 midos, we were doing a retrieval exercise, as it were. So we find Machlokes where no proper detail had been given at Har Sinai, because it was left to Chazal to determine. There's a very important principle, the Chazon Ish says, in Hilchos Treifos, where a discussion takes place whether a treifah, which is cured by medicine, is still called a treifah. So we know that a treifah is an animal which is going to die within 12 months. Ah, but does that mean even if it gets a cure? If it gets a cure, then it won't die within the 12 months. And that cure is with modern medicine. So the Chazon Ish discusses this principle, because the Rambam says that even with medicine, that treifa is still called a treifa. And says the Chazon Ish that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah to Moshe at Har Sinai, and in a manner which Chazal would determine the Torah. And it was intended already at Mount Sinai that in the future Chazal will do the interpretations, that Chazal will decide on what halachas are. So much so that you've got that transition and that flexibility where you don't have fixed rules given at Har Sinai in every minor detail. The Torah is specifically saying that you have to have Chazal in the future to decide whether an animal is a treifa or not, and whether with modern medicine you will still call it a treifa. And it was intended at Har Sinai that these matters will be determined by Chazal in the future. So the Rambam lists in his Hakdama to the Perush HaMishnayos the various aspects of different mitzvahs where we have things handed down to us. He lists five categories. There is the accepted traditions which are handed down to us that everybody accepts. For example, even though the Torah doesn't say an eye for an eye literally, it says an eye for an eye, and we know from the Torah Shebal Peh it means monetary compensation. But that is an accepted tradition. There's no machlokas. His category number two is what we call halacha l'moshe misinai. What does that mean? Where the Torah doesn't actually specify exactly that your tefillin should be black, or that they should be square, that the amount of matzah you eat is a kezias, that women fast on Yom Kippur, that women are exempt from sukkah, that a get can be written on any substance which is detached from the ground, the knots of the tzitzis, the way the Sefer Torah is sewn up, that you can have a bris milah on Shabbos. So these are all halacha l'moshe misinai. There's no dispute about them. And yet, nevertheless, although Chazal in the Gemara finds asmachta, they find in the Gemara a way of leaning something in the Torah onto these dinim, they are not really specified in the written Torah, but they are in the Torah, namely that they are deraisa. It's what the Rambam would call in his Lashon, midivrei sofrim. We often mistranslate his phrase midivrei sofrim as midrabbonon. That's not what it means. When the Rambam wants to tell you that a din is midrabbonon, he uses the word midivrehem. And I once did a computer search on every single instance where the Rambam writes midivrei sofrim, and you'll find that these are all matters which are halacha l'moshe misinai, which are dinim d'araisa. So the Rambam's third category is svara, where you use your own human logic, or Chazal used the human logic, to determine what halachas are, and that could include gezeirah shavah, like, for example, that one marries a woman with money, or with a value of money, like a ring. That's svara. And then the fourth category are gezeirahs, which Chazal made as precautionary measures, as a geder, for example, chicken with milk, or like we discussed last time, Gevinas Akum, cheese made by non-Jews. These are gezeiros, that's the fourth category. And the fifth category, which Chazal made, are takonos, which are the lesser rigidity and which are more advisory, even though they are halachas. For example, 30 days before Pesach, you start learning about the halachas of Pesach. So that's a takona. So in the first two categories, one and two, the accepted traditions and halacha l'mishu Sinai, there are no arguments on those main categories. And the question which we really have to ask, which leads us to a bit of a history lesson, is did Chazal really forget halachas? Namely, from the way the Gemara speaks, shelo shomshu kol tzorchon, it sounds like they just forgot things. The way that the Gemara appears to paint the picture is that there was a much lowering of standards. And you might say that. There's nothing wrong in saying it that way. After all, you know, a Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu knew less than Moshe Rabbeinu. And a Talmud of Rav Moshe Feinstein knew less than Rav Moshe Feinstein. And a Talmud of Rav Chaim Kanievsky knows less than Rav Chaim Kanievsky. That's perfectly legitimate to say. But there is much more to it than simply saying that things got forgotten and there was Yiridas Hadoros. We have to look at the historical context of what was going on at that time. Because in this day and age, we've got flourishing yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael and all around the world. We've got the art scroll revolution. We're giving access to so many people to do their daf yomi or other learning or whatever it is. We're living in a way in a malchus shel chesed, even though we might not say that about Ofsted and certain other aspects of the British hierarchy, but we are living in an environment we are free to learn Torah without constraint. Let's look at what was happening at that time, towards the period of the end of the second Beis Hamikdash. Things were really in very dire straits. We know from the story of Hanukkah that the Hasmoneans managed to succeed against the Greeks, who tried to make sure lahashkicham tarosecho. As we said in the Alanisim on Hanukkah, they wanted us to forget the Torah. And the Hasmoneans fought the Hellenizers. But the Sadducees came along and they displaced the Hasmoneans. And the Sadducees were holding public office. They were wrongly described as a religious sect. Josephus gives an account of them in great detail, but Rav Avigdor Miller describes in his Behold a People in Torah Nation what the truth was, what was going on, that the Sadducees were not really a religious sect as such. They were taking the written Torah as Torah, but they were not honoring it. They were in for power, and they were in for the wealth. And so, from the Ovos to Rabbi Nosson in Perek Hay, they separated from Torah and its values. And if you look at the Gemara in Brachos, in Dos Chavtes Omud Aleph, and you get their historical account of Yochanan HaKohen HaGadol, he served till he was 80 years old for many years as the Kohen Gadol, and then he became a Sadducee, what you'd call a Geshmatayit. And he forced Judaism, a forced conversion on the Edomians, introducing, bringing in hostile elements. And those people, they brought along Herod. King Herod, he killed off the Hasmoneans. He conquered 60 cities. And he saw the Torah sages as a threat, initially. And he went out and he killed 60 great Torah sages. 49 were from the Sanhedrin. And there are very few who managed to survive this genocide which was being brought by King Herod. There was Yeshua ben Parachia, who managed to escape to Alexandria in Egypt. There was Shimon ben Shetach, who managed to hide from King Herod, hidden by Shlomis. And we know from Josephus that people were punished by Herod for observing rabbinical decrees. There was one great godel who was spared called Baba ben Buta. In Gemara Baba Basra, Daf Gimel Amud Beis, it talks about him, how he was spared, although he was blinded by King Herod. And eventually King Herod saw the evil of his ways, and he sat down. He sat down with Baba ben Buta, and he said, "What can I do to compensate for all this evil I've done?" He was a bit of a maniac. They said apparently he killed wives of his. He killed children of his. He was worse than King Henry VIII. But he did sit down with Baba Ben Bhutta and say, what can I do to make up for all this? So Baba Ben Bhutta said, well, you've destroyed the light of Israel, and therefore you can make up for it by doing something for building, for the Beis HaMikdosh and the building and the refurbishing and Har HaBayis. And he was known for doing great grand projects. Not only did he do a great refurbishment for the Beis HaMikdosh, he built the fortress at Masada, he built the port at Caesarea, he did a big thing over the Moris HaMachpelah, and he liked making his name great by doing buildings. It took 10,000 men 10 years just to build the retaining walls around the Temple Mount, and the Koisel, which we have today, was built by him. He appointed then a Kohen Gadol, and nevertheless, despite the things which he made himself look nice for, he was really a vassal of the Roman Empire and keeping us in control, and things were really bad under him. But after the Churban, we had the Bar Kokhba revolt, big war with the Romans, there was Hadrian, the war of Beitar, the number of Jews killed in Beitar, if we look in the Perek HaNizok, in the fifth Perek of Gittin, 52 years after the Churban, Hadrian killed hundreds of thousands of Jewish people. There was famine, there was disease, there was genocide. And we all know, of course, the story of the ten martyrs, the Asura Horigei Malchus, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Chananya ben Trajan, and the others. Wet sponges of wool being made to torture them to death. What were they being killed for? Simply because they were the Gedolei Yisrael. The Gemara in Pesachim, Daf Nun, talks about it, Barachas, it's in Pei Aleph, Avodah Zorah, Daf Yud, Yud Ches. The misery which we suffered, the persecutions, this had an effect. It's amazing when you think about it, when you ask, why is the Machlokas B'Israel? It's amazing that we have what we have today, going by what they went through. That the Sadducees took over the Sanhedrin. This is in Megillas Tanis, in Perek Yud. With King Yana and King Shlomis, there wasn't one proper Yid in that Sanhedrin except Shimon ben Shetach. And who was this King Yana? He was an evil king. He slew 50,000 of his own people. He targeted the Gedolei Yisrael. So this King Yana is discussed in Brochus Chavtes. It's so depressing when we look at these stories. And there were those who tried to salvage us from crisis. Before the Churban already, when Torah was being forgotten, Ezra came from Bavel and he brought Torah to Eretz Yisrael. Hillel came from Bavel and he brought Torah to Eretz Yisrael. And Rav Chia came from Bavel as well. And when Hillel arrived in Eretz Yisrael, the people didn't even know simple, straightforward halachas. He came and it was just before Erev Pesach, which was going to fall on Shabbos like it does this coming year. And they didn't know whether they could shech to Korban Pesach on Shabbos, because Shabbos was Erev Pesach. And he told to them what they can do or what they should do. Of course, Korban Pesach is Docher Shabbos. But that such a question had to be asked showed how low the people had become in their ignorance. So that gives it all a historical context. We can go on loads and loads on this, but, you know, we don't want to just do a history lesson, but this is important to know in the context of what was going on. And when we say Shalosh Shomshu Kol Tzorchon, that they did not sufficiently use their facilities of Shimush, let's remember what happened to the Beis Din HaGadol and what happened to the persecution and famine and disease that people were suffering, that the Gedolei Yisrael was still managing to keep up the Torah going on. So that's when we come now to Hillel and Shammai. So the first disputes were really when it came to Hillel and Shammai. In fact, there were only three arguments between Hillel and Shammai themselves. But the Gemara in Eruvin, Daf Yud Gimel on the base, says, Omar Abi Abba, Omar Ab Shmuel, Shalosh Shonim Nechluku Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, Halonu Omrim Halacha Kemoseinu, Halonu Omrim Halacha Kemoseinu. So each side said, look, the halacha is like us. And they justified it with their arguments. Yotza Baskol, a heavenly voice came down, Va'omra Elu Va'elu Dire Elokim Chayim. Both of them are words of the living God. can you say that both are right? No. So the Baskel says the halacha kebeis Hillel. So the Baskel said the halacha is like beis Hillel. Now, there is a halacha that we don't listen to a Baskel, that we don't listen to a heavenly voice. There's a story in Bava Metzia about a debate with Rabbi Eliezer and the other Chachomim about the kashrus of a certain oven. And Rabbi Eliezer said, if I am right, then the river will flow backward. And so it did. If I am right, the ceiling will start caving in. And that's what happened. He said, if I am right, there will be a Baskel which comes down from Shemayim, which says that I am right. And a Baskel came down and said that he is right. And the leader of Sanhedrin stood up and said, Lo Bashamayim he. It's not in the heaven. The Torah was given to Chazal to determine. Acharei Rabban Matos, you go according to the majority. And he was put into Shmuti, he was put into Cherem. That is the way the Torah operates. But then you can ask, why was there a Baskel? Well, that's maybe for next time. But the Baskel was saying, Halacha kebeis Hillel. There are views that when the Ovis kept the Torah, they kept according to Beis Shammai. There is something the mystics say that in Olam Haba, we keep according to Beis Shammai. But when we're down here in our plain, simple world, we keep the Halacha like Beis Hillel. Mipnei ma zochu Beis Hillel. So the Gemara asks, why did Beis Hillel merit this, that we go according to Hillel rather than Shammai, lekvar halachah kemoson, that we fix halacha according to them, mipnei shenochin la'aluvin hoyu, because Beis Hillel act in pleasant ways and in patient ways, they were humble. The Shonin Divrei and Divrei Beis Shammai, that when they learned their halachas, or when they expounded their halachas, they first quoted Beis Shammai. V'lo od ela shemak dimim Divrei Beis Shammai le'divreihan. They first listed Beis Shammai, they examined Beis Shammai, and then they gave their view. So because they showed that sentiment of humility and being in their pleasantness of ways, they were given that priority. In fact, it is believed that Shammai's pupils had much sharper students. Their intellect was greater. But it's not always the intellect which wins the day. We spoke about losing the Beis Din. When the State of Israel was founded in 1948, there were people who approached the Chazon Ish and said, let's make a new Sanhedrin. And the idea was taken very seriously at the time, and an actual list was made, apparently by the Chazon Ish with some of his followers. They made a list of Rabbonim who would sit on this Beis Din. And it was a big shocker. I heard this, I remember, from Rabbi Cooper's Upsal, that there was going to be a big shock, because some rabbis were on this list who people had never heard of, who they thought were nobodies. And there were some great rabbis who were very much in the public eye who were not included on this list. What is it that made the Chazon Ish made such a list? He was looking at not just those with the sharpest intellect, but those who had the strength of character, those who had the humility, those who had the pleasantness of their ways. And what was more important, that they showed a level of respect to Shammai. There was no real argument between them in terms of broigus. Their children married each other. That was the sort of machlokus that there was between Hillel and Shammai. But they enabled the possibility that their own views might be wrong. And maybe we might suggest something in conclusion, that the reason why we don't really follow the Rambam is because when you go through Rambam, he presents everything as clear cut. Oddly and ironically, that is not the ultimate derech of Yiddishkeit. The ultimate derech of Yiddishkeit is to quote the other view, to examine it, to respect it, and then to explain why your view might be the correct one to follow. And that is the view of Rav Yosef Karo the Shulchan Aruch, who will give other opinions when he's also giving his own view. So we follow the Shulchan Aruch. We encourage dissent. We encourage difference of opinion. That is our DNA. And that is the way to seek the truth. And that is the way we will know that Elu v'Elu Dibur Elokim Chayim, that we will be all discussing the words of the living God, however our views provided. There is one caveat to that. We have to accept that Torah is min hashamayim. Because if the Reform and other kofrim come along and say, well, if machlokus is allowed, then you could accept our view. Or we're in the majority, we outnumber you. But that lacks the basic qualification that Torah is min hashamayim, that we have a respect that Torah was given to Moshe at Sinai and it's handed down, and that we use the shloshes omidus and we rely on our Rabbonim for that purpose. And with that, with the respect we show each other, with the patience that we show each other, and the love and Avas Yisrael that we show each other, we will progress not only in Talmud Torah, but in all other ways of our lives. And that will lead us to Bias Gel V'Shiach B'mherav Yomeinu Amen. Thank you.
Part one of the subject matter of
I have had a question come in on my screen just as we were talking from Gershon about women sitting in the sukkah. Gershon, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I got. Yes, I did say something about women fasting on Yom Kippur, yes. Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai, and
yes, we can hear you, Gershon.
And I did mention women being potter from sukkah. Are you suggesting that that's svara because of women being exempt from time bound mitzvahs? Silence.
There is a bit of a delay, I think. Gershon? Gershon?
All right, well, we can come back to that next time. No problem.
Okay, anyway, I wanted to thank you, Eli, very much for attending and giving us another share in this long-running Sunday morning bagel breakfast share without the bagels and without the coffee.
Hi.
Bagels. Hopefully we'll be able to participate together in shul with bagels and breakfast and coffee in the near future. But we're grateful that you were able to give us the share, and we look forward to your next installment. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
If anybody has anything else to say, please say now.
Well, next time I intend to quote a Gemara in Sukkah about showing how great the our Chazal were, that even the lowest of the lowest, or the Beinonim, the average ones, that the birds flying above Yonos and Ben Uziel would shrivel up in the heat of his learning because the Malachi, the fiery angels, were above him. And then we will talk in detail about Hillel and Shammai and Abai and Rava and maybe other machlokeses to see whether we can find any common denominators amongst them. And then in part three, we will perhaps move on to the other ideas of machlokes which are not Lashem Shemaim, when they are Lashem Shemaim and when they're not. Thank you.
Yeah. What about machlokes between contemporary poskim?
Yes.
Ramon Feinstein and Shlomo Zalman and things like that.
I'll try and deal with that as well.
Yeah.
That could take up the whole of number three, in fact. Yes. Well, thank you for joining me, and I appreciate it very much.
Thank everybody for joining this year. Thank you.
Thank you.
Kultus.
Thank you, Eli.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.